accession number 33206, reel 4.
Mr. Greet, reel 4, you mentioned that the weather was very bad in your time during the North Sea. Did they give you any special clothing to cope with that at all?
Oh, we all had, we had plenty of clothing. Oilskins, duffel coats, sea boots. No, we all had plenty of clothing. In fact, I was just looking at this. I've lost it now, but anyway, you imagine the boat's crew all wearing wet weather gear, plus life jackets and, you know, and rowing an oar in heavy seas. It wasn't a laugh. I didn't do it. But I only had a pistol. I didn't carry a rifle. They did. And you imagine, I mean, some of the ship's sides were very, very high in liners. And you climb up a rope ladder when the ship is doing this, you know, to wearing all this gear and with a rifle slung over their shoulders. And I say, I only had a pistol. You know, it was no picnic. You had to be pretty fit, pretty strong to do it. Anyway, go on. Mm-mm.
And were they mostly liners that you were boarding, or
were they?
Were they mostly liners that you were boarding? Were there other sorts of ships?
I can only remember liners. Yeah, I can't remember anything else in the North Sea. I mean, there wouldn't be anything else except, well, there would be, yeah, trading ships. No, it would only be liners. That's all I can remember, you know. Long time ago, yeah.
And you said you would take them to the Shetlands. Was the ship based at the Scarpa Flow or somewhere up that way?
Well, we weren't really based anywhere. I mean, we were just at sea. Presumably, if we needed anything, which we didn't, but if we had, we would have gone into Scupper and got it. You know, just nearest base, really. We were Portsmouth manned. You know, all ships in the Navy were either manned from Portsmouth or Chatham or Rosyth or somewhere, and most of the sailors come from that area. That was the aim of the game. Well, it didn't always work out, but that was the game. So we were Portsmouth manned, and Portsmouth was our base. But, I mean, we wouldn't go there if we needed something in the North Sea. We'd go to Scapa.
Okay, and how long were you taking these patrols?
How long were you in the North Sea?
Yeah.
Spent my 20th birthday at sea in the North Sea Patrol. So I was 19 when the war started. After some months in the North Sea, we moved on to North Atlantic convoys. I don't know how many months, I can't remember. We moved on to North Atlantic convoys. And we left the North Sea. But the North Atlantic was the same, weather-wise.
And so with those, would you be, what did those convoys consist of?
Our first convoy was from Nova Scotia to Liverpool. 67 ships of all sorts, tankers, ships that carried food, all types of ships, 67. Now, 67 ships covers about 30 miles of sea. And our job, and we were the only escort, the first convoy, and our job was to keep this lot in order. Some could do 10 knots, some could do 15, some couldn't do any without losing steering way. And we arrived in Liverpool, I remember, with 32. Now, what happened to the others, I have no clue, but I think they all made it. But our job, as I say here, life seemed to consist of merchant ships, lousy weather, submarine warnings and attacks, but we survived by the grace of God and good fortune. Tired out and worn, to use the wording from a popular song. The Enterprise was fitted with an open bridge, and seas came over pretty frequently. And the art, of course, was to dodge the sea by getting somewhere underneath. And all the books were unusable and whatever, you had to remember what was in them. And it was pretty rough, the North Atlantic convoys. We did that for some time. And it was always Nova Scotia to Liverpool, Liverpool to Nova Scotia. And we brought, later on with more escorts and people, we brought ships when America came into the war, brought American soldiers, you know, ships full of American soldiers, but then we had a battleship probably in the middle, and the middle of the convoy. We used to put the tankers in the middle because they were the most precious ships. But there we go. That was our next job.
And as a signalman during these convoys, what sort of messages would you be communicating with?
You had a pattern of the convoy, because you always had a convoy conference before you sailed, and ships were allocated to positions, and you had a commodore of the convoy who was always in the front rank, etc., and you had to brief them on the signals that we were going to use, etc., etc. And my job was knowing where they were, what they were doing, who was that who left and can't keep up, and you know, making signals to the commodore what to do, what not to do, etc., etc. It was a pretty busy time. And remember, we were in two watches, so we were 4 hours on and 4 hours off, but the 4 hours off was frequently filled with something else. And we rarely took our clothes off. You know, I mean, you expected to be torpedoed any minute. I mean, as soon as you went to sea, you were in enemy waters. There were U-boats everywhere. At that time, they weren't all that number. They were around, but ships did get torpedoed. But later on, when they had about 300 U-boats in the North Sea or somewhere, you know, their life got a bit more dicey. But we did get organized. We didn't have enough ships. I mean, all the ships we had, we didn't have enough for all the jobs worldwide that they had to do. And so we alone bought the first convoy. Can you imagine going around 30 miles because we had plenty of speed, but even so, in a heavy sea, you can only do a certain amount. And it was impossible. That's why we only got there with 32. We just couldn't keep them together. Anyway, we did the convoys continuously. Get into Liverpool, a few days, off again.
Was it the same at the other end of Nova Scotia?
Absolutely the same. Just been back to Nova Scotia last year. And Nova Scotia, there's a huge harbour, I suppose you'd call it a harbour, space, where you could form 67 merchant ships and get them all going, you know. I mean, after all, Merchant Navy had its own rules. They didn't want to be governed by the Navy at all. They wanted to do 10 knots, they wanted to do 10 knots, you know, and that was it. Some couldn't do more, and we weren't. We couldn't decide whether the ship could do more or not. I mean, we didn't know. If you say you can only do 10, well, you can only do 10, as far as we were concerned. So you put him at the back, and he probably drifted off. He didn't care. You know, life wasn't all that easy with governing the Merchant Navy at that time. Anyway, off we go.
Did you have any scares from U-boats?
Oh, yes, yeah. We didn't, at the beginning, we didn't actually see any U-boats, but we were conscious of them. I mean, we had Aztecs and things. We, you know, we could search for U-boats. But we didn't at that time. Remember, that was right at the beginning of the war. We didn't actually see any U-boats. They weren't organized either. And remember, in heavy seas, they can't operate. And they're nearly always heavy seas. They have to go down. And down below, they can't do much. They can't come to the surface. If they do, they can't see because they're low and the seas are high. In fact, I can quote you a little. I know it's over the page, I think. The only advantage to this type of weather was that it made it more or less impossible for enemy submarines to operate us against us. They were subjected to the same weather as we were. An interesting quote from a U-boat commander, which I saw, was, "No U-boat could be controlled at periscope depth during a storm. It either had to be above or well below sea level. So underwater attacks were impossible. Surface attacks were unthinkable because nobody could see, move, aim, or do anything." So, you know, the weather was in our favour. We didn't have any problems at the beginning, but you always expect them. You know, they're there all the time. You expect them. You're in enemy territory. But we didn't, at that first convoy, we didn't have any problems.
And when you visit, were you able to get ashore at all at Liverpool and in Halifax, I assume it was, in Nova Scotia?
I suppose we did. I can't actually remember. We got ashore, I remember, in Nova Scotia. But we weren't there long. I mean, maybe 2 days while they formed the convoy, which took a bit of... We didn't bother with that. So maybe we were only in Nova Scotia a couple of days before we turned around and came back again. And we had the fuel, of course, and maybe ammunition, if we'd used any, and get probably food. And I mean, we had plenty of food on board. They had huge refrigerators. But even so, I mean, you had to keep it all stocked up. So at both ends, we had to re-provision and refuel. So we had 2 or 3 days to do that, nothing. Yeah, I remember going ashore in Nova Scotia because Nova Scotia was dry. All to do with church and things. I've got crap in my left leg. But we knew how to get it. And remember, having been at sea in the North Atlantic, and we were ready for a drink. And we learnt that a certain place we knew where they made it in the bath, we would knock on the door, and the little thing would say, "Yes, whiskey." Hand would come out, $15 or whatever it was, and you put in the $15 in the hand, and a bottle would come out, but you couldn't drink it except by disguising. We'd go into a little cafe called the Bon Ton Cafe. We'd order a Coke or something, I can't remember what, and then put the whiskey in the glass instead of the Coke. And that was the way we did it. And we learned, because we went back to Nova Scotia many times, we learned very well how to look after ourselves. And when I went back last year, I looked for the Bon Ton Cafe, but it isn't there anymore. It's gone. I wanted to relive our experiences. Anyway, here we go.
Is there much else to do at ashore in Nova Scotia?
When dancing with the girls, I remember. Well, we did, you know, eating, drinking when we got it from the bath, dancing, picking up a girl, maybe, you know. When you're 19, you do these things, don't you? It was a reaction from the sea, you know, being in two watches and never taking your clothes off and what have you. We just sort of relaxed and did the things which we could do, whatever was available.
Do you remember much about the other convoys that you took back and forth across the Atlantic?
Oh, not in any detail now. I remember the first one because it was the first one and it was 67 ships. No, I mean, a lot were ammunition carriers. And remember, I mean, England had to be given everything, fuel, ammunition, a lot of provisions, and those are the type of ships we brought. Plus, as I said, when America came into the war, the American troop ships, Queen Mary, I remember, backwards and forwards, all the big ships, and the escort did increase. You know, we had destroyers on an anti-submarine screen around the convoy, and the big ships in the middle, the battleships, and us nipping up and down everywhere. We had a lot of speed. We were rather exceptional. No, I can't remember any others in detail, but they were always big, but were always better escorted. We had anti-submarine groups, you know, with frigates and things when we were organised. But in the beginning, we weren't.
Was it during this period that you were sent to Norway?
That came after, I think, yeah. That was Norwegian campaign was after the convoys. You remember Norway, well, you don't remember Norway. We were always worried, not we, but the government worried about the Scandinavia. You know, would the Germans go there? Now, the Germans needed metal. It's not called metal, but anyway, it is metal, from Norway, etc. And you always thought that there was a possibility they might go there. But I don't know how they came to the decision in the government, but we didn't go. When we decided to go, the Germans got there first, and they went into Denmark at the beginning. But they had been up in Norway and had reinforced Narvik with them. And so we sent a fleet, really, to Narvik. And Narvik was a complete dead loss. We lost ships, we lost people, we lost a lot of people, and it really came to nothing. And our job was bombarding. We went up to Narvik in the fjord, bombarding shore Germans, landing soldiers. We took with us the South Wales borderers, I remember, who were all young men seasick, and we landed them and followed them up, bombarding ahead of them to get them up. But, I mean, they didn't get anywhere. The Germans sort of hid in their trenches and then popped up and machine gunned them. And we bombarded Narvik, where we saw German concentration. We were very close. And we spent a lot of time dodging bombers and all that. When we first went, there were no German aircraft because they were all involved down in the south. So we had a fairly free time. We just bombarded, stopped for lunch, bombarded again in the afternoon, and I was sitting on the bridge when there was a row of bombs came down the starboard side of the ship, about 6 feet away, shrapnel everywhere, whistled past my ears, you know, just luck. And that was the beginning of the German air attack. Then every day, and it was the summer period, you know, long days and short nights, we were bombed. And other ships were sunk and things, but we got away with it. And Norway really was a dead loss. We felt completely alone. Nobody cared about us. We were fighting in Norway, and if we got sunk, and that was it. Cross them off, and that's it. That's how we felt. But we had two Polish destroyers, the Gross, Loskowica, and the Grom, fire and thunder and lightning. We used to anchor at night in the fjord and dark and get underway as soon as it got light. We were anchored in the fjord with the two Polish destroyers there. We were getting underway. Two German aircraft came over the, because it's all rocky there, came over the top, dropped bombs on the Grom, sank it, disappeared. And we picked up the, and it, life was like that. We picked up the survivors, and there weren't all that number because they were not organized either. It was early in the morning. And life was like that. You know, you had airplanes come over all the time. And we
were you able to take much shelter from air raids?
No. Well, I mean, bridge is all metal around. Yeah. All you could do was crouch underneath and hope that... I mean, we had all the guns aft, and we had anti-aircraft guns, but, I mean, that didn't stop them. We had Stukas, German airplane Stuka, comes down vertically, screaming a noise as it comes, and he drops his bomb and turns. And I came up, I remember, one afternoon, carrying a cup of tea, going onto the bridge to do my watch, and I looked after, and there were six Stukas lined up behind us. You could see the bomb drop, and on the bridge, the captain would give the orders. You'd say, "Bomb away," and you could see it come, and he would turn violently to port or starboard or stop engine, go astern, and you had to assume that the bomb was aimed to hit you so you could dodge it. I mean, it could possibly have not been aimed, but anyway, we got away with it. And we were, if the ship was lifted out of the water, I mean, not out of the water, but, you know, quite a long way with a delayed action bomb that went under the ship. And I mean, but that was Norway. And we eventually did what we should have done in the first place and evacuated. And when we evacuated, we had to go to a place called Mo, which was a long, winding fjord with mountains on either side, very little room for maneuver, violent turns left and right. And to take off soldiery from Mo. And we went up there with three destroyers to take off the soldiery. And how we ever got out, I'll never know. They came over the top, and we could hardly move, and they could come low because the rocks, they could come over. And we were narrow missed God knows how many times. We got away with it, and we picked up the soldiery, as did the destroyers. One destroyer was hit, but the others got away with it, as did we. But we lost people, you know, with shrapnel and what have you. And when we finally made it back to the open sea, we had burial ceremonies and what have you. And everybody was shattered. Anyway, go on.
Why are you off? No, Vic, what sort of, what were you up to? What sort of messages were you?
Well, we were bombarding. We landed the soldiery, bombarding, supported the soldiery. We put a shell through the church in Narvik, and it didn't explode. And it left a round black hole. And some friends of mine just going up to Norway, and I said, "Look at the church in Narvik, will you? See if there's a round hole in it." It didn't explode. And the reason we did it was because the Germans were in Narvik, and we saw a lot going into the church. So we assumed that maybe that was their headquarters, so we would bombard the church. But after that one shell, we changed our minds. Mm-hmm. And didn't, I don't think we hit the church anymore. But that was the reason for firing at the church. I mean, Germans were everywhere. We used to machine gun them on the. There was a railway to Narvik, and it came through a tunnel. So we bombarded the tunnel and blocked it. And there were Germans in trucks, and we used a machine gun. And, you know, we were that close. We could see them. But that was our aim. Destroy as many Germans as we could. Bombard. Support the army. That's it.
Were you mostly getting your targets visually then? Or
well,
were you mostly picking your targets visually?
Yeah. Yeah, visually. We didn't have radar. It wasn't invented.
No, what I mean is, would the army or people in Narvik radio, or not radio, or signal to you?
We could see them, yeah, yeah. No, they didn't signal. They didn't have to. They were desperately trying to make their way up to Narvik. We dropped them at the beginning of the fjord.
Okay, and so you returned from Norway. Where did you return to?
Scapa Flow. Mm-hmm. And then on to Plymouth. But the ship was out of line. You know, instead of being strictly vertical, as ships are, it was because of the bombs, you know, we were like a pepper pot. It was holes everywhere. It was with shrapnel. Hmm. So we went into Plymouth. And while we were in Plymouth, the army was evacuated from...
Dunkirk.
Yeah, it was Dunkirk, wasn't it? Yeah. So we didn't play any part in that. Otherwise, we would have done. But we were in dry dock. They were trying to get the ship up straight, which they did finally, roughly. Mm.
What were you doing while they were refitting the ship?
Well, I think the normal things. I mean, we always had to have communication watch, and I honestly can't remember. I think we lived ashore, because when the ship was in dry dock, you know, you didn't live on board. You went into the barracks. I think I was in the barracks. We used to go down the ship every day and get her up to date, restore, all that sort of thing. I don't remember in detail. Had a shore leave, I suppose. Yeah. Mm.
Okay, and what happened to you once the ship was ready to go back to sea?
What happened when she went back to sea?
Yes.
We went to the South Atlantic, where the Graff's Bay was playing around. And we knew we were going south because we were all issued with tropical gear.
What did the tropical gear?
Shorts, shirts, stockings, white shoes, the lot. And we went south. Our job south was looking for the Graff's Bay, and I'm very glad to say we didn't find her, and looking for foreign shipping. I mean, we had quite a job investigating all the ships, but there was plenty down there. We went into three ports, Montevideo, Montevideo. I can't remember the other two. But we were only allowed 24 hours in a neutral port unless we had repairs to do, when we could have 48 hours. So we had 48 hours in each of those ports and had a good time. Looked after by the local English community, who were glad to see us. And we were fine. We didn't find the Graff's Bay, but she was found, of course. But we didn't find her. And she would have blown us out of the water. And we stayed down there for some time. And then we went up to the Red Sea, I remember, convoying in the Red Sea. And then my mind starts to get a bit vague. I think we then went to South Africa. You know, we spent quite a lot of time there. And then we went east to Trincomalee and Singapore and places out there where the Japs were. And I don't know whether you want me to go on there. Do you want to?
Was that mostly convoy sort of work again? Like, was this in the east? Was this mostly convoy sort of work again?
We didn't do any convoying in the Far East. We joined up with the Far Eastern Fleet. Oh, but in the meantime, of course, we'd had forgotten. We had Mers el Kebir, where we hit the French fleet in harbour in the Mediterranean. Here we are. We went to the Mediterranean next.
Okay, let's stop you there for a second.